Welcome to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Rod Bennett. Rod Bennett and I, we're standing strong in a dark hour for American Christians. We're living in an era where Donald Trump is now a persecuted Christian. The IRS is auditing his taxes, the taxes that he won't tell us about. And his explanation for that is it's because he's such a strong Christian.
That's got to be it, right?
What other possible explanation could there be?
Yeah, that's got to be it. That's got to be it.
But, you know, the guy, I mean, as somebody has said, he's not a stupid man. He's just a smart man who knows what stupid people want. It must be true. That's it. Because we hate Obama. And Obama, you know, to be sure, Obama has, how should we put this, demonstrated a certain hostility.
Yes, toward, thinking about his initiative of his tax the churches or something. I'm not sure which one it was, man.
Just, you know, the IRS using the IRS and so forth to.
Well, no, I'm thinking of the Obama initiative, roundly decried as anti-religious freedom. That was went all the way to the Supreme Court and received a unanimous judgment against the president.
There was a smashing defeat a couple of years ago. What they tried to do was they tried to impose EEOC regulations on a Lutheran church called Hosanna Tabor Lutheran Church.
That's right. Yeah,
and order them to ordain women. And this went to the Supreme Court, and in a 9-0 finding, the Supreme Court said, "What the hell is wrong with you?"
So, yes, his credentials as having a religion problem are pretty.
They're there. But you know what? That does not make Donald Trump a victim of religious persecution. And that's, you know, that's, of course, the point here is the claim that I'm being persecuted because of my strong Christian belief, because I don't want people to know what's in my tax returns, is, what's the word for that? Rubbish. Bourgeois.
Codswallop.
Codswallop.
Yes.
But so here we are living in this age where all you have to do is just make a claim like this, and some people will buy it, which amazes me. But somehow we will weather this storm of religious persecution. The new Diocletian shall not prevail. And
goodness, well, we may have need to raise that name of Donald Trump again on this broadcast, but we'll try to minimize it as much as possible, folks.
Well, so how's it going? What's new?
Going very well. I teased you last week with the idea that there's a new book of mine that's due out soon, and I was hoping to have it ready to show this week, but or talk about this week. But so it's not quite ready yet. Next week.
All right.
So, but that's been occupying a lot of my time, and I think you guys will think this book is really neat.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Is this fiction, nonfiction?
A little of both, actually. A little of both. I better talk about it next week. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Well, we'll just draw a discreet veil over all of this, and we'll bring it up next week.
Something I would like to mention. We didn't get to finish this last time. We got cut off a little bit. It's a thought that I've been meaning to share with you, and I think it may be especially interesting to think about in light of what's going on in the pro-life movement right now. Mm-hmm. My son has got an old dear friend, a kind of neighborhood buddy of his as he was growing up, who is, let's just say, he's you know, tapped into a sort of a different culture than my son is. Mm-hmm. He's more kind of the streetwise hip hop sort of personality. Okay. Which is what made the two of them so good together, because Jack's exactly the opposite. But sweet fella, but he's got his finger on where the 21-year-olds in his socioeconomic group are at right now. Uh-huh. He posted a Facebook meme where the gist of the thing was, okay, you guys are talking about banning abortion, but hey, if we're going to do that, we need to ban, guys running out on their pregnant girlfriend, and we need to ban, we need to make it against the law to leave her holding the bag. And he went on down the line as if, you know, whoever heard of such a crazy bananas thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And I wrote back to the guy and I said, Jeffrey, it may surprise you to hear this, but all of those laws that you see in old movies back when people wore hats and smoked pipes and stuff, all of those old black and white movies where they had laws against divorce, laws against desertion, laws against adultery, all of those laws were there for exactly the reason you mentioned.
Right.
In other words, there was an enormous body of law, both written and unwritten, cultural, as well as on the books, to do just exactly what you're talking about. In other words, to penalize people who do destructive things to children, unborn children. In other words, bring unborn children in the world with no support, no stability, no... they don't put their girlfriends or wives or whatever into a position of having to take children off to a back alley abortionist or an orphan's home or all the other things. There was an enormous net of laws on this subject, and it all worked together as part of the one system.
Right.
Now, when we decided back in the 60s and 70s to have this sexual revolution thing that the great philosopher Hugh Hefner was pushing so strongly. This is what this piece that we thought we could just pull out all the old taboos against having no frills, no strings attached sexual liaisons of any type that we want to. Because after all, there's birth control now. That one little pin that we pulled out turned out to be the linchpin to the whole thing, and all the rest of the laws fell very quickly in a domino effect. But the reason I bring this up is linked together, and sometimes the pro-life movement has talked, myself included, having had a record in pro-life, has talked as if we can just get a Supreme Court decision that goes 5-4 our way, we fix the problem. Right?
Oh, yes, I hear it all the time.
It's like we've never, that'll do it, right? All we got to do is overturn Roe. Now,
that's right.
The Lord knows Roe is bad law. And it's had a disastrous effect on the country, not the least of which is to drive all reasonably orthodox Christian people into the arms of the GOP, who plays them for suckers for the most part, or has up until now.
Yeah.
But it's to fixate on overturning Roe without spending any serious time thinking about what you do the next day, you know, where does it go from there, is I think the great besetting sin of all of this. I think people are so, now in some ways I want to be sympathetic. I think people are so shocked and appalled by the fact that the United States is doing this great crime. You know, I mean, the smoke is coming out of the crematory chimneys, you know, both literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
that it, they sort of short circuit, you know. I think people do tend to short circuit on this and just focus on, we got to overturn that horrible decision.
Yeah.
But they've kind of looked at it and focused on it hypnotically for 40 years now without giving a great deal of serious thought to, you know, the enormous edifice of law that surrounded the right. ban on abortion. And that's right. what Jeffrey, the 21-year-old, you know, regular dude, is suddenly discovering. You
right.
know, that a ban on abortion standing there naked and alone without any consideration of how the woman got there, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is weirdly unrealistic.
Oh,
so
yeah.
unrealistic that it does make you wonder what planet these Christians come from, you know?
Right. Yeah. And in addition to that, we have signed off on what was proposed to us about 30 years ago by, I'm blanking on the name now, Archbishop of Chicago. We'll get back to it when we return. But yeah, you're exactly right that, we've taken a serious wrong turning in the pro-life movement, and Donald Trump is our reward for it. We'll be back when we return after this. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We'll be back with Rod Bennett right after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
And welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we're here with Rod Bennett. We've been talking a little bit about how we got here as far as the fortunes of the pro-life movement. I was having a senior moment there before the break. I was thinking of Cardinal Bernardine. So Cardinal Bernardine, 30 years ago, basically proposed something called the seamless garment. And the image of the seamless garment comes from the robe of Christ that was woven all in one piece. And so you don't take any parts out of it, because if you do, then it falls apart. It's actually, it's where we get the term heresy from, actually. Heresis means to draw out. And the image is exactly, you're drawing out a thread from a piece of cloth, and then the cloth falls apart. Because you can't just pick out one part of the faith and say, this is the only part that matters. Still less can you use that part of the faith to attack the rest of the faith. And that has, unfortunately, been exactly the choice that the pro-life movement got suckered into about 30 years ago, when we basically were given the alternative. You can embrace the whole of the church's teaching, which is a whole weave. It doesn't mean that every part of the church's teaching is as important as every other part.
Right. That's the normal way that this idea is attacked, is to say that, you know, every piece of it is equally heinous, or,
right.
you know, when it's contradicted, or that it's all of them are equally important. Nobody ever says that.
Right.
What they say is they all come from the same source.
Right. And
so that you just can't safely ignore them. Yeah.
Right. And so you've, in the Catholic tradition, it is, and always has been the case, that you can have areas and things that you focus on. So there are apostolates that are just devoted to caring for the sick, or apostolates that are just devoted to preaching the gospel. I go to a Dominican parish. That's their charism. And there are, you know, all kinds of things that the church does and people focus on. And that's all perfectly legitimate. And the church never says boo against that approach to things. But at no point is it ever legitimate to say, my thing is preaching, and I will use my charism of preaching to denounce people who take care of the sick. I will. My thing is, you know, being a, you know, being pro-life, and I'm going to use my concern about the pro-life movement to attack people for advocating the church's teaching on a living wage. But that is exactly what the pro-life movement got seduced into doing. And so the pro-life movement went from saying not everything is equal, which is perfectly true, to saying if it's not one of the five non-negotiables, abortion, gay marriage, euthanasia, human cloning, and embryonic stem cell research, then it's a waste of time. It's dumb. This sounds liberal to me, and so I'm against it. And that is where we wound up with in the pro-life movement, which is why, of course, you saw with the election of Pope Francis. You know, when Pope Francis does an interview and says there's more to Catholic teaching than just abortion, the pro-life movement should have sensibly said, well, of course, that's true. Instead, they flipped out. And they have been frightened of and attacking Pope Francis. A lot of people on the right have been doing this ever since. And so we've wound up with a pro-life movement that pits the unborn against much of the rest of the church's teaching.
Right.
And doesn't ask, is this what the magisterium teaches? It asks, is this something Bernie Sanders says? Because if it is, then it's bad. Yep. And that just shows that
you would think that people would have gotten used to by now the idea that the popes don't fit comfortably into either camp ideologically. In other words, I very much remember as an evangelical being totally confused by Pope John Paul, because half the time he sounded like a socialist, and the other half he sounded like a flaming conservative, you know. And people just couldn't understand it.
Yeah.
The one idea that seems never to have occurred to them is maybe my understandings of conservatism and liberalism need some adjustment. Maybe I missed a step somewhere. You know.
Yes,
that never seems to occur to them.
That's it. That's the situation that we find ourselves in. And so now we're presented with a party, you know, that is grappling with this ridiculous pretense that somehow or other, because he, in the midst of taking five different positions on abortion in the space of 3 days at the beginning of April, it was actually hilarious to watch. You know, Trump would contradict himself sometimes in the middle of his own sentences.
Yeah.
And it was very clear, you know, that this is a guy who's just like, I don't care about this crap, but you dumb people do. So I'll say whatever it is you want me to say. And it was incredibly clear that was what he was doing. And so he winds up saying five different things, including something, I'm opposed to abortion. But then finally concluding with, we shouldn't change any of the laws. And in essence, coming down on exactly the same position that Hillary Clinton has.
And many Democrats have traditionally had. That is that, sure, I personally don't like this. I'm uncomfortable with it. But don't change the laws.
But don't change the laws. And so, you know, we're sitting now in this hilariously ridiculous position as a pro-life movement of trying to pretend to ourselves that Trump cares at all about this, when he obviously does not. And in fact, holds the same position that Hillary Clinton does, that the laws should never be changed, which basically means if your hope is, you know, that it's somehow or other he's gonna nominate Supreme Court justices to give a rip about this, just dream on, because you're delusional.
Well, also there's that whole element that I think this Supreme Court business poisons just about everything. You know, the three of the most reliable pro-aborts to sit on the court in the last 30 years were nominated by Ronald Wilson Reagan and George the First.
Yes.
George Bush.
Well,
it's a crapshoot.
And
the
And George II as well. You know, it's John Roberts who said that Roe is settled law.
So I sincerely believe that. I don't say my next step would not be to say that Reagan and Bush played people for suckers.
Mm-hmm.
I think Reagan and certainly George W. Bush were sincere in their desire to do something about abortion. But even if you've got two sincere men like that who really do want to make a difference, they made almost no difference at all.
Right.
So now we're going to roll the dice on this guy who, you know, again,
who obviously doesn't care. And so for me, what concerns me, I mean, Trump is Trump. He's going to just be what he is, you know, whatever that is. And, but what amazes me though, is to watch, a movement that at one point was sincerely dedicated to, what the church still calls, you know, a pro-life position, which is protection of human life, the dignity of human life from conception to natural death. That simple formula is now such a bizarre funhouse mirror thing on the part of people who describe themselves as pro-life. And so they're pro-life except for babies in the wombs of mothers who are in areas that we want to bomb, in wars of extremely dubious provenance that the church said, don't do this. This is a bad idea. And it doesn't meet any just war qualifications at all. We don't care. We're pro-life and we want to bomb these people.
Yep.
And then we said, we don't care. We're pro-life and we want to torture these people. And now with Trump, we're saying we don't care. We're pro-life and we want to torture these people. Trump has actually said, even if it is completely fruitless in terms of gathering intel, he doesn't care. He wants
it'll
to
make
do
us
it.
Feel better. It'll make us all feel better.
It just makes us feel better to know that we're torturing people.
And we can dish it out as well as take it.
And this is now the pro-life position. And he's calling for the murder of civilians. We don't care. We're pro-life people. And we support the murder of civilian women and children. Because why? Why do we do it? Well, because the GOP tells us to do it. And that's the thing. The reality is this. We've now reached the point where, and it's by the way, it's been this way for 15 years at least. We've reached the point where the pro-life movement no longer means devoting your energies to preventing abortion. The pro-life movement now means devoting your energies to defending whatever it is the GOP tells you to go out and defend. And in this case, it's going to be Donald Trump, a guy who took vengeance on his infant nephew with cerebral palsy in a spat over daddy's money. That's what you're now defending in order to be quote unquote pro-life. And you know, my attitude is if that's the case, then it's time to
go home and rethink your life.
Go home and rethink your life. We'll be back right after this. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we'll be back with Rod Bennett right after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we're here today with Rod Bennett. By the way, if you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-573-4-BREAD-4, 1-573-4-BREAD-4, and join the conversation. You can also text us at that number, and you can tweet us at Breadbox Media, 1-573-4-BREAD-4. there's your chance. So anyway, yeah. So I delivered myself of a rant last segment,
but it's been known to happen.
Well, it happens, you know. So Leo Brown, the Uber Gruppenführer of Breadbox Media, I think just picked me and said, "You seem to have a lot of rants, and so here, have a microphone." And I said, "Okay, I'll just do that for a while."
Well, it makes for entertaining radio, I guess, right? Hey, I was going to take a minute. Suggested to Mark during the break that I would take a minute to address the concerns that probably have come into the minds of traditional, maybe longtime pro-lifers as they've been listening to the program, and that is the concern that I very much understand: the idea of, well, okay, all you guys are saying is fine and good, but after all, bottom line, what am I going to do? Vote for the Democrat?
Mm.
Because the Democrats have certainly made their absolute devotion to the cause of abortion on demand perfectly clear.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if someone were to say to me, you know, at least with Trump, we've got a shot in the dark, you know, who knows? We might bet on Trump and accidentally the number will come up like our number on a roulette wheel, you know. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Hillary, it's a dead certainty that she's going to stump and get out there and put her prestige behind the furthest extremes of the pro-choice position. I very much understand this idea. In other words, if you're in a desperate situation, you might very well gamble everything on a long shot. And I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take a minute and suggest my response to that, mm-hmm. which I think Mark may have a different idea. So okay. I'm going to say my piece quickly, and then Mark, I'll let you add what you want to it.
Well, thank you.
Here's the reason why. since it's your show, it seems okay, the least I could do, right?
Generously done.
My point would be this. My response would be this. This is much bigger than the election cycle of 2016. If Donald Trump, in fact, becomes the nominee, this will be the first time since Roe when the Republican Party, well, let's say the first time since Ronald Reagan, when the Republican Party has allowed a man who vocally says Roe versus Wade is the law of the land, I think it's going to have to stay that way. In other words, that's the pro-choice position, whatever else he said about how personally uncomfortable he is with it or dislikes it or whatever. This would be the first time that dike is breached. In other words, when the GOP allows a pro-choice man to become their standard bearer.
Right.
That's very important. Mm-hmm. Used to be we had two parties, an unambiguously pro-choice and an unambiguously pro-life party.
Mm-hmm.
If you allow this man to become the nominee, then we have two pro-choice parties, although one of them may run a pro-lifer from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
For those of us who think that's important, and keep in mind, I'm not a card-carrying member of the Republican Party, but I do understand that America has to have a conservative party. It's the nature of our system is that the liberal party has to have an opposition. I think it should be a healthy, sane opposition, however.
Which we do not have.
Right. And putting Donald Trump in the White House is a way to allow him to permanently co-opt that party and remake it in his own image, because that's what the president does.
Yeah,
he has tremendous power to turn the ship, which is hard to turn. He's got a tremendous power to turn it in a different direction. So I personally think in the kind of calculation probably that only a pretty political person thinks about, but I think that 4 years of the Clintons in 2016 is worth permanently turning both parties pro-choice. In other words, saving at least some remnant or shell of the Republican Party for the use, God willing, in the future of better people seems to me worth doing. And after all, I mean, the Republicans shouldn't even be thinking about winning right now. I mean, what a party in this disarray needs to be thinking about the future. It's ridiculous for them to be thinking about winning this November election. You don't win elections in this condition. Your party's about to split into two parties. And the last thing that you need to be prioritizing is 1 4-year cycle. So that's my answer to the what am I going to do vote for the Democrat question.
Yeah. Well, and I certainly respect that. I think anybody who for practically any reason says I will not vote for Donald Trump has my respect. I kind of don't care, you know, beyond that, you know, it's like, okay, there's other arguments that can be had, but that's, you know, the first thing you do is you put the fire out. After that, you know, you start asking the question, how did the fire start? And for me, when I look at this, my habit of mind is to think way beyond elections, because the issue is much deeper than that. A friend of mine has observed in the past that voting is the stone in the stone soup of civic involvement, and I think that that's true. It's a real thing that we do affects the common good, but I think in most ways it's the least important thing that we do.
Yeah. Yep.
The really important thing for me has been all along has been, how do we think as Catholics? How do we order our priorities? How do we evaluate the world that we live in? How do we live prudently? And how do we incorporate the church's teaching into our thinking? And that's the thing that I think that has not been happening at all, practically, in all the hubbub that goes with, you know, what you have described as the team sports that is elections, you know. You get people who are just kind of out there cheering for, you know, numbers on jerseys after a while, you know. Right. Are you team Clinton or are you team Trump? And it's like, that's really beside the point. So for me, when we're looking at the question of what to do about our abortion regime as faithful Catholics, I think we have to begin with prudence. And prudence is the virtue that looks at what is so, what's actually happening in the real world. Not certainly we can look at what we would like to happen, but we can't move from what we would like to happen to pretending that the world is not as it is. The world that we're living in is dominated and has been dominated for 30 years. By two parties, both of whom don't want to do anything about abortion, and a population of people who don't want to do anything about abortion. Right. 20% of the American people believe that abortion should be outlawed. 20% of the American people think that we should have exactly what we have now, which is abortion on demand without apology.
For any reason.
For any reason. 60% of the American people don't like abortion and won't do anything about it and don't want to do anything about it because they look at an average situation of a crisis pregnancy and think to themselves, I don't want to tell that person what they can do and what they can't do.
Going back to how we opened the show, the guy's not around many times. There's no safety net, political safety net, but no, you know, network for somebody like that, et cetera, et cetera.
So you've got a population of Americans, 80% of whom don't like abortion, and 80% of whom have no intention of doing anything.
Well, because they don't know what to do. They are clear-minded enough, not blinded by passion enough to see that just having the Supreme Court overturn something is not going to fix it. It's any more than just saying alcoholic drinks are outlawed fixed the drinking problem in America during Prohibition.
Right. And so the fantasy that which is constantly appealed to, you know, well, says the anti-abortion person, 80% of Americans don't like abortion. Absolutely true. And then the pro-abortion person says, 80% of Americans don't want to outlaw abortion. Well, that's also true. And so that's where we actually are. And our politics is all predicated on that. So you've got two parties who have figured out that when you're early in the campaign, you say all the stuff that will get your gung-ho base going. And so
because those are the only people who turn out for the primaries.
Right, those are the people that care about this stuff. Yeah. And so the Democrat will always say, you know, I mean, remember back in 2008 when Obama was vowing that on his... we're up against the break. We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We'll be back with Rod Bennett right after this.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Mark Shea and reunion with Rod Bennett talking about life, the universe, and everything from a Catholic perspective. Before the break, I was saying that prudence, if you want to move forward in life, prudence means that you actually pay attention to what's really happening instead of simply repeatedly imposing your wish on what would could be going on in a dream world. In the real world, we're living in a country that has no intention of doing anything about abortion and whose politics are predicated on that. So you have one party that is symbiotically dependent on the other party. I mean, the two parties work together this way.
I think if you don't mind my interjecting something, I would want to finesse a little bit the idea that neither party wants to do anything about abortion. I think what both parties want right now, it's very similar to what the Dred Scott decision tried to do. The Dred Scott decision is the famous decision about whether a black man who traveled to the North prior to the Civil War, because he had gone into a free state, did that automatically make him free? It was a test case that was submitted to try to bring out a general decision on the issue of slavery for the whole country. Right. One of the saddest things about one of our worst presidents, a man by the name of James Buchanan, who was president at the time, was that he told the country in a speech that he was going to get behind the Supreme Court decision, which was going to come out in a few days. He was going to get behind it no matter what it was. The Supreme Court's the ultimate arbiter in our country. Mm-hmm. He suggested that that everybody should take the decision and it was their patriotic duty to live with the decision, and we'll move on from there. You know, now it turns out later that James Buchanan knew what the decision was going to be in advance. The court had informed him of what it was going to be. So he was not being honest. But what he was trying to do was trying to take this incredibly divisive issue off the political table. And he was trying to do it because he believed it was dangerous and it was going to tear the country to pieces.
Mm-hmm.
The decision failed to accomplish that purpose. Mm-hmm. But in the case of Roe, it succeeded. The purpose of Roe was to take something that both sides saw was a potentially catastrophic fight in every state, in every street over abortion, to take it off the political table as a way to defuse it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think both sides have consented to and liked the fact that abortion was off the table for the last 40 years. That's the reason that they don't make more serious efforts to bring the thing to a head, because frankly they're terrified of it on both sides.
Yeah. Of course. And that's the thing, is that it really is the case that both parties see it in their interest to maintain the status quo.
Right.
It's a huge vote getter.
Well, let's go ahead and say they see it in the country's interest.
Well, sure, but they especially see it in their own interest. And the only people that don't seem to get this, of course, are their gung-ho base. On both sides, you know. So every election year, they're doing it now. You know, Trump just came out with a list of candidates for possible Supreme Court nominees, right? And so what happens? Well, when that happens, the Planned Parenthood and various pro-abortion organizations gin up the faithful with panicked fundraising letters about how Trump is just about to overturn Roe versus Wade. It will be the end of civilization as we know it. People throw all their money at Planned Parenthood, and they throw their money at the Democrats, and it all, you know, everything's great, right? And then none of that happens.
In the post-Civil War era, it was called waving the bloody shirt.
Yeah.
It's exactly what, it's the same thing today.
Yeah, and so you get this, you know, these panicked, hysterical, and then what happens next is right-wing people look at the panicked letters going out from the panic machine at Planned Parenthood, and they say, Donald Trump is truly one of us. Yeah. And he really cares about this stuff. And then with that go, of course, if we do not support Donald Trump, then, terrible things too terrible to describe are going to happen when Hillary is elected. Because what? Well, because she's going to maintain the status quo.
Right.
Which is all that she has to do, you know.
Both parties are committed to maintaining the status quo for a mixture of good and bad reasons. Absolutely.
Right. And so that symbiotic relationship just keeps playing out in our politics, and has done for 30 years, and will continue to do so for another 30 years if we don't wise up.
Now, I can understand. I can see our listeners saying, well, where does that leave us? Here's what I would suggest.
Okay.
Let's say we could get in our time machine and could go back to 1973 and tell the nascent pro-life movement that here's something you guys need to know. Roe will still be fully in place in 2016 AD.
Right.
Okay. That's not going to change. This is a one timeline universe, so that's how it's going to go. Okay. Now, what do you do then? Let's say we knew that Roe was going to be in place until 2056. How should we then live, you know, as a great man once asked?
Yeah.
That's what we're getting at. In other words, if you know that Roe is going to, if you knew for a fact that Roe was going to stay in place, how could you be pro-life in the meantime?
Right.
What other pro-life things could you do in the meantime? Not saying that nobody's ever tried other pro-life things, but the emphasis has definitely been on the Supreme Court.
Right. Well, funny you should ask, because this brings me to exactly my point, which is that what we have to do as Catholics is return to what we should have done in the beginning, which is listen to the whole teaching of the Church and stop getting played into increasingly using the unborn as human shields, not looking at the question of how to end abortion, because we're not doing that. We're spending most of our energy now defending whatever it is the GOP candidate or president, once he's elected, tells us to defend.
Yep.
Even if it's
a man who is essentially a pro-choicer,
we're being asked for
pro-life reasons not to damage the Republican Party by balking at a pro-choice candidate.
Right, exactly.
That's what
right.
we're being asked to do.
And so what we've effectively done is we have become, in the name of life, we have become enemies of the church's teaching on a whole bunch of different areas. So we are, you know, let's face it. I mean, the GOP is the enemy of life when it has come to unjust war, which two popes and all the bishops of the world said,
I mean, they jumped the up and Iraq, down. They did, don't do this, did everything they could to say, do not go down this road.
We don't care. We are going to do it anyway. And so we did it. We have become enemies of the church's teaching on life when it comes to torture. We are now in the process of becoming enemies of the church's teaching on life when it comes to the murder, the cold-blooded murder of women and children. That's what Trump has called for. And if you
for
say
for you're the crime of being related to a terrorist,
for the crime of being related to a terrorist, we need to take out their families, says Trump.
Yep. Yep.
That is now the pro-life position. And so when you've gone that far afield, it's time to just stop and say, how does this stack up again against the basic mission statement of protection of the dignity of human life from conception and natural death? How far have we strayed from that? Well, we've strayed pretty damn far.
Yeah. Another thing I would say, if I could get in my time machine,
that's
very much connected to this. I need to preface what I'm going to say by saying this is not a call for Christians to get out of politics or quit voting or whatever. But if I could go back to 1973, I would say, look, all this time and money and effort you're going to spend for the next 40 years to try to overturn Roe, which isn't going to happen, spend it on evangelization instead.
Yeah. Well, and
think about it. We had a culture of death. We Westerners, we white people, Europeans, we had a culture of death before when we were called Romans. Okay. Right. The culture of the Roman Empire was a culture of death par excellence. Not just abortion, but infanticide, every other kind of horror along those lines.
Oh,
so how did it ever change? What changed it? Well, the people changed. They were changed by being converted. They were changed by being, their minds were changed. And that's how it was done. That's the only way a culture of life has ever been proven to be overthrown. That is through evangelization.
Exactly.
And I might stick my neck out and say that's the only way it'll be done now. I'm not saying get out of politics. I'm not saying don't have a political opinion. But I am saying that the real method, the one that really works, is to change people's hearts about this, their hearts and minds and their thoughts on the subject.
Yeah, it's, you know, it is notable that the Roman Empire, which had, I mean, we're not talking about just abortion and infanticide. We're talking about gladiatorial games and all the rest of it. All of that was changed, and it was changed with no such thing as a vote. Yep. Thank you so much, Rod Bennett, for being on the show today. You've been listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. I'll be back tomorrow with Chris Franklin. Till then, have a lovely time. Thanks.
So long, bye-bye, everybody.